bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Big is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting solutions.
Hello, welcome to The Big Show from the British Tech Network. I'm Ian Rankin, and we're going to talk the week's tech, the whole week's tech, and nothing but the whole week's tech. And yes, I've had a haircut, got too close to a lawnmower. For the Australian lady named Sam who cut my hair, you need to learn imperial measurements, girl, because this really is not 3 inches.
Mm-mm-mm. You promised her 3 inches.
If it wasn't for the fact it's going to grow, I may sue. But it's growing slower now, I'm older, I suppose. Badum-tish, thank you. Joining me, fantastic group of people. Knowledgeable, suave, sophisticated, erudite. People of the modern era.
Yeah, okay.
And James Hart.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Sarah.
A very good evening to you, Ewan. A very good evening to you, listener.
How's the week been, Jamie?
It's been absolutely crazy bonkers. We're still keeping the world service going. I don't want to preempt my cool thingy, but the last couple of days have been hell for me at work, and I'll explain why later.
Oh, that's what I love, those little tags that just keep people in till the end. Just what we need.
It's going to be disappointing.
Okay. Make a welcome return, Mr. Ian Grant, our man who knows BlackBerry.
Oh, yes. I do know BlackBerry, but I haven't been doing much BlackBerry work lately.
Oh, right. You've been off to Geneva.
I have been. I've been to the Motor Show, which was fantastic. If anyone follows me on Google Plus, my pictures are there if they want to have a look. They're a bit amateur, but it's the best you can do with the phone camera.
It's all right.
It was really good.
I didn't know you were a bit of a petrol head then.
Oh, mad.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, you learn something every day.
Completely mad in cars.
Excellent. Beneath him, Sarah Gray.
Oh, we're back. The woman who thinks cars are for getting from A to B. Sorry, no, Ian.
I'm in there as well.
That's all right.
The girl that's working furiously on our new website that's due to launch 1st of April, and it's thereabouts? Or,
Well, I got the design today, so
brilliant.
That's I'm going to be working on that tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Russ Cluett. If anyone needs any design work doing, see Russ Cluett, and he will do it. Oh, now, here we go. Man. I've just got a new payoff line for him.
I like that.
Russ Cluett will do it. There we go. It's a bit too 1950s and shaken back, isn't it? So.
And also, it leaves him open for a number of offers he probably doesn't want to accept.
That's true. And last but by no least, the man who's got no clue who Shake and Vac is, Eric Lanigan.
That's true.
Mate, there's a whole culture of Shake and Vac. The girl in the A-line skirt.
With chronic
diarrhea.
I don't
even know what word you're saying. Shake and Bake? What?
Shake and Vac. You need to go on to, as always.
We did this some time ago with this particular one.
Do the Shake and Vac and put the freshness back.
We have been there before.
We have, right. How's it going, Eric?
Good.
Did you have the same hairdresser as me?
Yes, I think we went to the same barber, even though somehow I think one of us had to take a very long plane flight to get there.
Not as long as the Australian girl that cut me hair. She's only been here 7 weeks. It took her 24 hours.
Well, it's her. She's just flying around the world just giving people haircuts that are too short.
She's the haircut assassin.
Exactly.
The week in tech. It's been a fairly mundane week, it has to be said. There's a bit of problems for Android, though, because apparently developers are running in their droves away from Android and aren't keen to develop for it. And we've also got problems with our internet economy, because apparently there's more going out in the internet for finances for the big 20 than there is supposed to be, or they thought there were. Games in a lot of hot water. They're looking like they're imminently going into receivership. Are they an American-based firm or a British-based firm? Are they going to file for Chapter 11 or just go pop?
I'm going to pop. They're British.
British, I think.
British, yeah.
Based in Stoke, I think.
Commodore has pushing out a new Linux-based Amiga, and it looks just like a Mac Mini. And Twitter has refreshed TweetDeck, you'll be pleased to know. But when you go and have a play with it, you'll be horrified to find out that they've done none of the stuff that made it really cool before you started. And the playbook has apparently... issued a statement. BlackBerry has said that if you jailbreak the playbook so that it actually functions well, they're going to invalidate the warranty. So that's both of you out there that have done that. The week in tech. Should we start with Android? Because I thought that was a really interesting story. Allegedly, developers are running in their droves away from the platform. They've got no incentive whatsoever to do anything for it. And if that's the case, it's going to die a bit of a death, no?
In the week where Android was, well, in the fortnight that Android was declared the world's favourite operating system for phones, or was it the UK? The UK's favourite operating systems for phones is outselling Apple simply because of the sheer volume of devices.
Hmm.
And developers don't want to develop for it because there's too many damn versions.
All running 2.1, these devices, were they? Or is it 1.5 and upwards?
Well, 1.5 and upwards, absolutely. New phones are getting ice cream sandwich, but there are still old bits of crap being sold for cheap. I mean, you can buy an Android phone in Tesco's for 40 quid now.
SIM free?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
There are some crazy deals. It runs an old version of Android. It's only got a little bit, you know, it's got a 1 gigahertz processor rather than the shiny dual core thing. But yes, you can buy an Android phone really cheap now.
Now, here's me,
the entry point.
Here's me being really stupid and naive because I don't know the answer to this, not being an Android user. But if I've got an Android phone, can I go and get ice cream sandwich for it and hack it onto it?
I mean, most cases.
Some handsets.
Some handsets. So
if only 1% of
signage and all that kind of malarkey.
In most cases, you can't.
Sorry, hang on. Start. Eric starts off.
Sorry. Only 1% of Android handsets that are on the market that are owned by people and that are in use are eligible for ice cream sandwich, from what I've heard.
That's not good.
There's two handsets, as far as I know. The Galaxy Nexus, which I think was released with it, and the phone I've got, which is the Nexus S.
And that's it.
You can put it on the Galaxy S, but some functions are missing. Basically, it's because the hardware varies so greatly, you've got to be able to make sure you've got procedure calls for every single little twist that the hardware requires. And if ice cream sandwich doesn't serve it, it doesn't serve it. It's a real frustration.
So is that the heart of the problem then?
Yeah. It's fragmentation.
Developers are running a mile because there's just too much out there to try and encompass. I mean, if you developed Angry Birds for the Android platform, is the version, how critical is the versioning on an Android phone for that game? Are you really developing just for, you know, like I think there's an awful lot of games on iOS that would run probably not very well, but they'd run backwards compatible with people that were running iOS 3 maybe even, you know.
That's an interesting one because not necessarily, because my kids have got iPod Touch second gen and they are getting very frustrated that there are games they can't play anymore.
Okay, there's a few new ones coming out, but you can. I've got original games that I bought when I first took the phone out and they've updated and updated and updated and they function. I'm presuming that because they were first iterated at iOS 1, iOS 2, that they'll still function in iOS 2.
Well, I imagine the operating system has been written. I mean, you will often see in the update, updated now for iOS 4.2, 5.1, you know, it mentions why the update has taken place. And I imagine a lot of thought and development goes into making sure. But then again, you've only got a handful of iOS versions and a handful of platforms to deal with when you're developing for iOS. That's the point.
That's why iOS development is so popular. It's because they've taken the model of the video game console. You have one Xbox, one PlayStation, and one Nintendo product for about 6 to 10 years, roughly. And in that time, developers can make applications that are perfectly tailored to the screen, the resolution, the color palette, just anything that you can imagine for one screen size or one hardware and software combination over another. Whereas with Android, I think the fragmentation there may push us back to a web-based model. I hope we do, at least.
So it's just not profitable because there's too many variables to try and code for. Is that what we're saying?
Yes, especially if you start hacking your playbook.
Sarah, what were you about to say there?
No, I was just going to say, I can understand it, and it does fragment the market a lot, so I can understand it. I must admit, when I first saw this, I thought, well, you know, I can't see why it would be the case, but, you know, given the legacy devices, out there. I can see it. While everyone's been talking, I've been thinking about, you know, what's the equivalent in the PC market. But I guess the nearest thing I can come up with is, because Microsoft have got a handle on the operating systems, and it's sort of XP and 7 and so on and so forth, so they've got it down to really to 2. But when it comes to Internet Explorer, there's still 6, 7, 8, and 9 out there, and that's the nearest equivalent. But in most cases, people aren't developing anything for that's browser specific, so you can't really compare it. So I can understand it in a way, but it's a bit disappointing.
Is there, I mean, there's a point here from Pete in the chat room. He's saying, jokingly, WebOS would have been solving the problems. But he's talking about screen sizes. You know, is the variability in screen size and dimension also another big fudge factor for developers to overcome in terms of resolution? Mm. Or is that just dealt with by a crop factory?
Well, I would have hoped that... I mean, obviously, I've not developed any Android apps, so I'm not sure. But I would imagine that it's the same way you design a website. You design it to be generic enough so that it will display best in the browser based on the width. But if you've got a low resolution, then it will handle that as well, just by the fact that it wraps around or it, you know, handles things in a reasonable way. I would have thought it wouldn't be that difficult unless the code base is that different between the different versions. That's the only thing that I can think of.
I mean, AMOLED screens are a lot higher resolution than the standard stuff, aren't they? So, I mean, they're not Retina, perhaps, in the same way as Apple describe it. But, again, that causes yet another functionality issue of...
But if I was Google, I would be creating SDKs for developers that enable a code base to be compiled easily in one version, another version, another version, well, another version.
This is exactly what Ice Cream Sandwich was intended to do, wasn't it? Was intended to bring together the hardware platform. And I think in some respects, they've kind of missed the boat. Not least because there's so much cheap hardware out there that can't run here.
Mm. Google have got to wait until we've got a larger proportion of gingerbread and Android and Ice Cream Sandwich phones out there.
By which time it will well be too late.
Yeah, that's true. But
it'd be interesting to find out whether Microsoft gets a foothold in the development.
What I find interesting is that you're saying there's less than 1% of the Android phones can actually run Ice Cream Sandwich, which is their latest iteration. We already know and took the piss out of Jelly Bean the other week and knew that was coming. And Key Lime Pie is now on the schedule as well. So we know the next two iterations of an operating system that covers less than 1% of the total available hardware that can run it. I mean, that sounds like a ridiculous business practice to me.
I think the thing is that the earlier versions before Gingerbread were the equivalent, must have been the Windows equivalent, if you like, of 3.11. They're really early versions that, you know, they've got simple requirements and they can run on basic phones. If you look at the kind of phones that you're running even Gingerbread on now, they are so much more complex and the requirements are that great. But that until that gets to a point where that becomes a standard, the same as the iPhone 3 and the iPhone 4, it's going to be difficult for Android to continue that development path.
I think one of the things that Apple has going for them that the other companies may not ever be able to catch up to or emulate is the fact that just like you have with the Xbox and the PlayStation and you've always had with game consoles versus PC gaming, it's not incumbent on the user or the purchaser of the game or the application to configure their system and make sure they have the right drivers and cross-reference the ideal requirements versus the recommended ones versus the baseline, and then to keep playing with, I'm going to reduce the texture and I'm going to increase the lighting, the light mapping detail. I'm going to bring down the depth of field a little bit. And it's just this constant tweaking, going to decrease the quality of the audio playback and just to try to get the right frame rate. Meanwhile, you pop the same game into your Xbox 360, you got guaranteed 60 frames per second, smooth as glass. The game developers themselves have optimized it to look the best it possibly can on that hardware. Now, if you compare that experience for a casual gamer or just a non-geek who doesn't want to get into the hardware and drivers and dig into that stuff, that is a huge difference in barrier to entry. And the same thing is true with software.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. And what you've got with the Xbox is you have a massive lifetime as well. If you consider how long it is from a launch of a product like that till it's superseded, you can have 5, maybe 6 years. With an Android phone, they're bringing out damn new versions of the software every 6 months. Every 6 months is just too fast.
So what you're seeing is... So what you're seeing is for non-hobbyists, for non-enthusiasts, the best consumer way to go about the best consumer platform is one that stays relatively stagnant but consistent, because that will ultimately give you the best.
Not even stagnant, not necessarily even stagnant. It's one that stays stable but fit for purpose. The whole thing about the Xbox is also you're finding that media delivery is being done using it because it is there, it is still in use, and they know that they can get stuff to a huge marketplace just by delivering it to one piece of hardware.
Right, but the graphics too. I mean, if you look at a modern Xbox 360 game now versus one that came out when the console was in its first couple of years, the difference is startling. So even when you would think, the games, I'm shocked. I mean, they rival PC games, and it's hardware that came out in 2005 for consumers, for consoles. That's the benefit of sticking with one particular hardware and platform and letting the developers tweak and get better with it over time. It always ensures that if you're a game buyer, you will get the best, easiest experience, the best no effort experience on a console than you will on a PC. The same is true with mobile apps.
And what there is there's this massive game of catch up going on with the hardware, because they are trying to sling more and more into a tiny little box to make it go faster and faster. And the operating system designers and the developers are constantly playing catch up on it.
Ian, you're our enterprise man. I mean, is any of this making it look like businesses are going to embrace Android as a business platform? Because it's going to turn you off faster than bromine.
No. My boss is quite keen on Android. He likes the cheapness of the devices, but I can't see it. We're still very much a BlackBerry house where I am, and there are a few men who just keep waving their iPhones at us and keep asking us to connect them to their network and get to the network, the ones that don't have BlackBerries. And I think if anything, we'll end up going down the iPhone or the BlackBerry route.
Right.
We just don't. I don't see the security for me. Android has been a credible alternative to a BlackBerry or even to an iPhone. Come to that, bizarrely. We've looked at all the sort of things of how well we can secure them. I mean, the new one, yes, great. Ice cream sandwich. It encrypts the handset if you connect it to our Exchange server, because one of our developers has got a Nexus-like server. And he says, oh, I'm putting my bones in. He wants to encrypt my phone. I said, well, yeah, it's going to. It's part of the new remit, sort of the settings and things. And, oh, I don't want it to encrypt my phone. Well, don't connect it then. You know, it's his own personal phone, so it's up to him what he does with it. You know, it's... Mm. We'll let him connect his, if he wants to get his mum on his phone, but if you don't, that's not a problem, really, you know, see what I mean. But it just goes to show it is very, very beatty. It's not so, again, it's not something we can buy a box load of them all the same and guarantee what we're getting. And we do have problems a little bit like that with BlackBerry, where handset to handset, they do change a bit. Because they do bring one out every 6 months, it seems, a new iteration of the Bold, a new iteration of the Curve come out.
They struggle to get a new operating system onto it.
Yeah, it's been revised just recently. The latest batch I had through a few weeks back were all on a newer version 6.0, whatever it is, and that was quite nice. They seem to have again changed the way the little upload, the application launcher works, and things like that. And they're still bomb-proof little things. To be fair, not the best handsets in the world by any means. I'll never be the one to defend them, but they are, for what they do as a business, still brilliant.
I mean, Google's pushed very hard with Google Docs to try and make it something that's business friendly, and you know they're willing to send out reps to talk to you about how to integrate it into a business functionality for you, how to use it as a business software. You know, if they really got this push towards business, you'd have thought they'd have taken an awful lot more care over their phones, because you know they need to create that closed loop of web application to handset application to get that benefit, and they don't seem to be even trying for that.
No, there's nothing credible out there that we could choose. There's a couple of interesting apps, mind you. There's a company approached us with an Android app, which is a completely sandboxed mail client. It'll run on that, it'll run on iPhone, and you can install their little app and up to your Exchange server, the mail goes into this sandboxed app, goes nowhere near your phone. It's completely controllable and completely encrypted.
Right.
Which we've been it's not worked brilliantly, but it's been demoed to us. I can't think of the name of the product now. My boss has been playing with it on his handset.
Chat room is to and fro on this. DT said that Ian Grant is an anagram of A ranting. I don't know why they're doing it. I don't know why they're doing it. An anagram.
To be fair, that's fairly general.
I've sat and read this, and there's not that many comments about Android and developers, to be honest, to read out. James Hart is an anagram of jam haters. And there's a comment about battery life there, but I have no clue. Moving on. Surprise, surprise. A study has found out that the internet is worth an awful lot of money to companies and also to GDPs of countries. The G20 apparently owes on average 4.1% of its products or its GDP to the internet sales alone. UK is topping the charts. We're not going to win Eurovision with Engelbert Humperdinck, but we're going to top the charts of this on spending on the internet. You reckon?
Oh, don't say things like
you
that.
You reckon Engelbert?
That is a great song.
Well, you think about how much work they've put into that man, and they've put him in front of a camera, and he still looks like he's falling apart.
He's led a hard life.
More
he's
plastic than life. Dolly Parton. And anyway, getting back to the story.
Sorry.
8.3% of our GDP is supposedly internet-based. I was surprised at that, I have to say. But Eric, you say you've got some insider knowledge on these stats.
Well, I did, and if I could find the source again, I will again have that inside information.
You didn't. You wanted to talk about this. You didn't get the source.
No, I didn't. Wait. No, I said I didn't want to talk about it because yesterday I saw the same story. I came across the story, and the story that I read in relation to it, which I now can't find by Googling, but it was from a reputable site. I do remember that said that their methodology for determining that was very faulty and dubious at best. It was like, we're going to compare the cost. We're going to aggregate the cost of internet bandwidth compared to retail sales that occur online compared with investments in internet infrastructure. I mean, it's just it's such a mishmash of where they got these statistics.
So this is not just retail sales, then?
No.
This is a whole pile of other stuff that they've thrown in.
On Radio 4, they said that it was money that we buy, where we buy things online, where we sell things online, and also where people invest in internet in one form or another, i.e. in websites or startups or so on and so forth.
So 4.1%, if someone said there's 4.1%, would you have said that sounded about right, or would you said it was over or under? Just off the top of your head, whether you felt it sounded a good figure. 4% of our total income is down to internet. Yes or no?
I thought they said it on Radio 4 program, it was 10%.
Well, we're showing 8.3 in the UK, sure. Yeah, according to this.
It's quite high, but it's not as high as 10.
UK market shows 8.3% of GDP in the UK is down to internet sales or internet function. Well, I thought that probably sounded about right, I have to say, because there's an awful lot of online shopping going on. We buy a lot of stuff. We've bought most of the stuff that's here in the studio online. Because I work away from home, I spend a lot of time. If I need something, I get it ordered and I get it delivered to where I'm working the following day. My last camera that I purchased, I had it delivered to the place where I was working. I mean, I probably live on internet sales more than anything else.
Keeps the postal service going as well.
Yeah, if it's not Amazon that's doing it or someone like that.
Which, with as we were discussing at work the other day, which with the potential plans of the government to privatise Royal Mail, puts them in a prime position to actually develop a new market if they're up for it. But I know that's not really tech. So
that's all right.
Our post office here started to put out TV commercials that say, "Next time, say it with paper." I'm not joking. They're saying, why just send an electronic receipt when you can give your customers the confidence of having a paper invoice?
No. Just being a bit stupid, is the American postal system that's been privatized and split up, hasn't it?
No, but it's being talked about because it's severely underwater.
Mm. Ah, good old very similar to ours then.
The USPS is renowned for late deliveries of letters and non-deliveries of letters. Don't give you.
Well, it's from where the phrase "going postal" comes from, I understand as well. So,
well, I visited the mail sort center years back for work in Baltimore, and it was horrific as a function. I mean, there was a guy sat on the floor picking up letters and throwing them back into the machine. That was his job. this guy's squatting down on his hunkers like he's working in a third world sweatshop factory. And all he's doing is picking up letters and throwing them back on the belt.
Wow.
But 5 years of that, he gets citizenship, so.
Oh, wow.
Maybe. Mm. So this is a bogus story then. We've wasted our time.
I told you. I tried to warn you.
No, that's all. We're play acting here, mate. Come on,
there's a fantastic program on Radio 4 called More or Less, which deals with these kind of statistical announcements and just sort of strips them apart. And they just go, well, there's no context there, it's meaningless. And that's the whole, it's 30 minutes of program going, this statistic's meaningless and this statistic's meaningless, and never believe anything you read about science reporting in newspapers, basically.
Oh, dear.
Okay, speaking of statistics.
Go
speaking
on,
of statistics that you can't believe, I'm going to throw this in, because I was going to do it last, I was going to do it in the last story, and I just barely missed it, jumping into this one.
Okay.
We are not at a post-PC era. Are you kidding me? This iPad thing does 20-60% of what your PC or Mac can do.
You bought an iPad.
I did. I won't be keeping it for long because as I set out to determine and now have, if you have a MacBook Air, especially a little one like I do, you don't need an iPad. It does. All the things I use the MacBook Air for, which is primarily like news reading and email, like the text-based, very lightweight stuff that is not CPU heavy. I've got my big honking Mac Pro from 3 years ago that still works just fine for video editing and mass storage and all that stuff. Mm. So for everything else, I've got the Air. So I tried doing this last week, everything that I would do on the Air on the iPad, and the screen is smaller. You can see less on the screen at the time. The mail program is not as efficient. I mean, all the software has a fraction of the desktop equivalent.
And you can only run one thing at once as well.
Right, right. And they're saying we're done with PCs. I mean, I think Apple, I think that is a cynical and untrue marketing term from Apple, but I worry if Microsoft is actually believing that hook, line, and sinker, because let's face it, their Windows 8 is based on the idea that tablets will dominate far more than any kind of, Wintel keyboard-based desktop operating system.
Either that or they got shares in screen wipe companies.
So, are you suggesting then that that we're not going to be obsessed with tablets in the future?
That's right. And I'm not ready to say this quite yet, but it has occurred to me that I wonder whether 10 years from now we're going to realize that tablets were sort of like satellite radio, at least in the United States. You know, we merged, we allowed Sirius and XM to merge because they were both about to go bankrupt. And the problem then was competition. And we looked at that and then we said, well, okay, we're going to go from two satellite radio companies to one. And the argument was made at the time that that's okay because they don't really compete with one another. The competition is with free terrestrial radio. And I think that's largely turned out to be true because they still have not gotten a whole lot of subscribers and radio continues to, you know, fade off into the distance. So that was okay. So I think that we may be looking at this, what right now is still like over 70% Apple's market share for tablets, and saying, why aren't their Android tablets more popular? Why doesn't Microsoft, when are they going to have their tablets out? Everything's going tablet, tablet, tablet. And Apple's got 80% of the tablet market. Well, I've just spent a week with a tablet, tried to use it as my only post PC device. And, I was going back to the PC and the Mac for almost for half the things I needed to do in a day.
Are you typical, Eric?
Well, that's a good question. I think that we may use, it is a consumption device. All right.
I thought Norman Collier had come back on the scene then.
Sorry, what?
I thought Norman Collier had come back on the scene.
No, Ewan, don't try and explain Norman Collier to
Okay.
Him.
We'll get more on Carly later.
Let him finish.
Sorry, Eric.
Because I've got a riposte to this. Okay. I'm waiting, Eric.
Sorry, Eric. I interrupted you. How can I interrupt that staggering start? Off you go, mate.
Okay, so the thing that might be true, I'm not ready to say this quite yet definitively, but we may find out that tablets are such a unique market, like satellite radio is, that they don't compete, that there is not a tablet market that will come to dominate and be a market in itself, but it may just be that tablets are one form factor that compete with a laptop. Okay, your thoughts.
Last Sunday was Mother's Day or Mothering Sunday, and I called me mum because it's what you do. And she said she's got a Mac at home and she can't get Adobe Flash to install on it. It needs this kind of plug-in to make it work. And she just lost interest. And she said, do you know what I'm thinking of getting? I'm thinking of getting rid of my computer and getting an iPad instead, because I don't need all the complications that computers offer. I mean, mum's 75 years old and she's thinking of canning it all and just getting an iPad. And I said, good on you, go for it. Because if all you want to do is in this little thing that you can carry around with you, go for it. So that's kind of the opposite of what you're looking at, Eric, where you're thinking the iPad doesn't do enough.
I mean,
well, I think the difference is saying, should I buy a magazine or a typewriter?
But this is why I was saying, are you typical, Eric? Because I mean, I've actually recommended iPads to people when they've asked me, and I know that all they're looking at interested in doing is reading their email, playing a few games and surfing the net. And for that sort of thing, it's perfect.
I mean, absolutely.
You made a comment.
I don't think we are typical.
You made a comment, Sarah, that you said it and it only runs one thing at a time, but that's not true. It doesn't. Everything that you run on an iPad is run concurrently, and if you stop running that application to go and do something else, you're actually doing effectively full screen swapping of an apps, and the app goes into deep freeze. It doesn't consume any memory. It just stops. And it waits for you to come back to it, not taking any of the resources away from your device. I mean, the iOS application switching is slick as snot, mate.
Well, that's different because I know originally, and this was a big thing about the iPhone and the iPad, about the fact that it could only run one application at a time.
It can't. I mean, the applications are all running in the background. They're all sat there waiting for you to come back to them. If you're talking about you can only type on one thing at a time, I'll grant you that's true, but then you can only type on one window at a time on Windows. You've got to switch windows to sit and type.
So can you copy and paste between different applications on an iPad and an iPhone?
Absolutely. There's an independent clipboard. There's no question of that.
You don't have
you guys are both right. You can do multitasking, but Sarah's right in that it does slow you down. That's what I experienced. It's not the same as doing an alt tab back and forth.
Double tap the home button.
Well, or you forget what application you were in or all that kind of thing. But here, I think the reason that people are supposedly in love with iPads, first of all, 70% of iPad use, according to, I think, Nielsen, takes place in front of a TV. 70%. So it's the additional screen. What?
Sit back device.
Exactly. Well, the TV is technically the sit back, but then the iPad is your second screen. It's the reading screen. But yeah, I think it's the difference between saying, would you rather have a magazine or a typewriter? You know, back to use a pre-PC analogy. Because the two are not really equivalent. You're either going to write or you're going to read. Now, to the extent that most people read or spend most of their time reading rather than writing, even when you're talking about email or personal communication, certainly with news or web browsing or catalog browsing, Amazon, any of that kind of thing, you're going to do that. That's fine with the screen. But as soon as you try to do a one-to-one comparison, I did my 11.6-inch MacBook Air compared with web browsing, compared with news reading, RSS feed reading, email reading, photo editing, all this kind of thing, storage of personal files, use of a USB thumb drive, all these things that people use their computers for regularly, you just cannot do with an iPad. And in the case of the web browsing, things like that, it's a smaller screen. It's a Retina display, yeah. But you do a lot of pinching and zooming to get the pages just right. And there's a lot of reorientating. So what I see is I see people get iPads and they're so enthusiastic. And then they bend over backwards to buy USB keyboard, Bluetooth keyboards for them and leather bound cases and carrying cases and external peripherals and adapters. And they try so hard to make this thing into a laptop. And really, they should have gotten a laptop to begin with.
No, I think some of the buying of the external peripheral stuff is kind of like having a show chihuahua thing in your purse dog. You know, it's something to just dress it up and it's something to buy that's nice for it. And you get the nice little back covers that go on that look like carbon and that kind of thing. But I think there's a point you make there about the functionality of the tablet needing a keyboard, and I always thought that was the case. But I use my iPad in meetings, and I fold it open, and I just sit and type on the keyboard, and the keyboard is so responsive, and it's as easy as typing. And now you've got the dictation, and the dictation does function very well. I typed something this week. I started off a document in Pages, and then I quickly realized that what I was doing, I'd be better off, because I was in a quiet environment, if I could dictate it. So I saved the Pages document, exported it to the iPad, and sat there with the iPad and filled in the table with speech. And I'd done.
You talk a lot more slowly than Eric.
I'd done the document in 10 minutes instead of an hour's worth of typing. It's exactly what I needed. It's not
by doing what? For voice recognition?
Yeah, I dictated in the, I had all of this. I was making a spreadsheet, not a spreadsheet, a table in a Word doc, in a Pages document. And I was sitting typing out what I wanted to do, and I thought, well, this is crazy. I might as well just go and put it in the iPad, open it up in Pages in the iPad, and sit and dictate the contents of each of the cells for what I want. And did that, and then I exported it back to the MacBook Pro, and I slid the pictures into the rest, the remaining field on the table, and that was it. Job done. And it took me half the time, less than.
Well, if you're saying it took you half the time to dictate into the iPad versus dictating into a voice recognition Mac or PC software, then I would say it couldn't have been, because all the time it took you to move the file off of it to this and then back to there and then synchronize it and then keep enlarging the display because the screen is half the size of your desktop display. You made it work. Obviously, you made it work. But my point is, people are trying too hard to make use of the iPad, having only bought it as a novelty.
Yeah.
After they buy one, Then they have to figure out, well, how can I make this purchase worthwhile?
You're not going to hear me disagree with your statement about, you know, are we living in a post PC era? Hell no, because we still need to go back to the computer. And I agree with you entirely. There's no way I would run this show off an iPad. There is no way I'd run this show off anything other than a very powerful MacBook Pro, which I've got, which is why I bought it as a backup. Would I want to sit in front of an iPad and work all day? Absolutely not. You know, you're never going to replace the stuff that I do with Photoshop on there. It's a great device that's used for viewing stuff, for seeing stuff, for presenting stuff, for doing low-level keynote presentations and things like that off it, and some limited functionality to help you. Now that it's got the voice dictation, I've found some way that it can help me. But the problem with the iPad is that people try and buy an iPad and fit it into their life rather than buying an iPad and then slowly working out the functionality that has to enhance their life. And that's what I've done. I bought an iPad and sat and played games on it for the first 3 months until I suddenly started realizing, oh, it could do this for me. It could do this for me. It could do this for me. Now I'm utterly and totally reliant on it because it does some things so much better, but it's not a replacement for a computer. I'm going to absolutely second that. No question, Eric. Anyone else use tablets for work? BBC's gone tablet mad, James.
Well, absolutely. Our frontline teams are going to be given tablets so they can enter, they can log stuff as they go around and do. So rather than having to write stuff on a bit of paper and then copy it up afterwards, they can actually log it on the system. So, yes, funnily enough, our Lord and Master John Linwood came to one of our stand-up meetings. We have these meetings at 11 o'clock where we sort of just go through everything that's broken. And he came with his iPad. And about halfway through, he kind of lost interest and was obviously playing Angry Birds. Gah! You know. So yes, the higher echelons of the BBC certainly do use iPads. Yes, us plebs.
Interesting. Last week at the Geneva show, almost every stand, the marketing people wandering around the stands getting interested in the cars were all carrying either iPads, Samsung tabs, a tablet device, which they were showing the customer, and they were showing video of the car moving, they were showing all the stats and everything. And you could really see a really good use for them, sort of in that kind of presentation market.
Well, from you've got the whole world in your hand, like the song goes. Sorry,
you've got the whole world in your hand.
Absolutely.
Kindle Fire, is that a realistic option, says the chat room. What works, says Peter. All right, mate, don't rub it in, you're retired. Playbook now comes with a keyboard and a trackpad.
Steel pants.
As well as. I mean, I know there's definitely keyboards that you can buy for iPad 3 and 2 that make it into a clamshell. effectively. Mm-hmm. So you can use it like a little touch screen, and then you can sit and type on the Bluetooth keyboard that's attached.
You can turn it into a laptop.
And it sits and props and turns into a MacBook Air effectively. But I mean, there's a certain point that you get 120 gig MacBook Air for £100 more than an iPad 3. And I'm with Eric on that one. That does seem a little bit silly in terms of the pricing. So your Mac.
Yeah, I think that at this point, tablets are still luxury add-ons. They are toys. They are novelties to be played with, animations to be enjoyed, apps to download. But does it provide an actual benefit over an equivalent lightweight, equivalently portable, equivalent in battery power? I'm talking about like an SSD-based Ultrabook or a MacBook Air. No, I think you would do much better if you're not intimidated by computers. If you in any way have ever considered yourself a power user, or probably most people who listen to this show, I don't think a tablet is a replacement for any Mac or Windows system of any size, shape, or battery life. I think it's only an add-on, and only if
this
you're
goes back
to
this goes back
cost.
To what Sarah was saying is, it depends who you are. You can either be, I've got my red pen again, sorry. You can either be a power user, or you can be a pleb. And I think there are a hell of a lot of plebs out there.
Pleb?
Plebeian. That's a classical reference, mate, unfortunately. It's not a British thing.
The other thing I was going to say was, I was at a trade show for kids. It was called the Big Bang Science Fair on Saturday. And at least two of the exhibits had an iPad behind a sort of panel thing, so you couldn't nick it, with an interactive display on it. I thought that was a really clever use for an iPad. It's basically an interactive screen. So the iPads have now reached a price, I guess, when, if bought in bulk, they can be used as an interactive display even. So it's the versatility of it, I think, is what sells the iPad, and the fact it's actually a small, very convenient form factor for displaying stuff.
It is. No, absolutely.
Just like now, almost every estate agent you go past doesn't have those A4 pieces of paper stuck to bits of plastic in the window anymore. They've got massive screens playing presentations of the houses that are for sale. It's just like that, except smaller.
Commodore, how he's bringing out a Linux-based Amiga mini desktop. Who wants one?
Yes, please.
Does it run your old games?
If it doesn't, I'll cry, because it just takes me back to the days when I used to have an Amiga, and it's how I got started in this mess years ago.
Sarah, is the Linux element doing it for you?
It's making me tempting, yeah. But I'm more interested in getting my hands on a Raspberry Pi at the moment.
It's
still a long queue.
It comes in black as well, and shiny. So there you go, the two colours, black and shiny. 300 gig and 600 gig SSDs are an option to go in it, but they're unfortunately $2,495.
This is a really quite sexy form factor for something which has been bubbling under for quite a while. They have been building Amigas with I think they've even been developing Workbench in a proper full-size PC case, and of course that looks crap. And so what they've done now is they've taken the footprint of an old Mac Mini and built that into an Amiga, and that looks a lot more sexier if 4 years old.
Chat room wants to know if I've got a picture for you. Well, there you go. There's a picture of it. It looks remarkably like a Mac Mini. I can see lawsuits akimbo here. But if you can play your old Amiga games on it, it can't be bad. That would be fantastic.
And nothing says futuristic like a brand that went extinct in the 80s.
Absolutely. All the people... What's the sales group for this then? Who's going to buy this?
Oh, this is totally geek central.
This is very, very geek central.
Men in their late 30s is the market for it.
You're looking at one of them.
Eric, you're not tempted?
You're not looking at another, because I'm 40, damn it.
Bad luck.
I think it's more about if you used one, isn't it, James?
You are, sorry?
It's more about if you used one.
Absolutely. Funnily enough, I was Atari ST and my brother was Amiga.
I was going to say, which one? Yeah, that's the
I didn't have an Amiga. Who did? Show of hands.
Oh, I did.
You did?
Yep.
Loved it?
Loved it. It's what got me into this mess in the first place, is why I'm now geeking like I say.
Dear. You got a bit of feedback coming back on your microphone, and do you want to just unplug it and plug it back in again?
Yeah, no problem.
And I'll do an advert for UK2.net, because they're the people that keep us afloat. They're fantastic. They're continuing the sponsorship of us. We're going to change our name on the 1st of April, so next week's podcasts, that'll be it. We'll be moving over to British Tech News, and you go to britishtechnetwork.com. If you want to follow us, you need to resubscribe. UK2 are coming with us. They look after us. They think we're fantastic. We think they're fantastic, and you guys really do support them. They're very happy with the amount of support that Bagel Tech listeners give them. Please keep continuing to support them, because without them, we would disappear. We've got Andy and Atco on the Mac Show tomorrow, along with Tom Merritt, and I can see us having a few downloads this weekend. UK2, don't care. We've also got... don't care about the bandwidth, I mean. We've also got some new podcasts coming on, and UK2 are fine with that. We're hoping that we're going to have a Welsh language podcast, so all of you taffies out there, you'll be able to hear and listen in your own native tongue. Bryn's looking at that for us. And we've got an iOS podcast. I know they had a meeting this evening about doing the first episode, so that'll be out soon. And we've got two coming from Carl. One of them with Missy, and the other one's an application developer podcast that's really cool. UK2 are just picking it up. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much. If you want 15% off your basket, then type in Bagel Tech. And if you want to get rid of the DNS management charge, then type in Bagel DS DNS, please. And you'll get a whole bunch of stuff. We love them. Thank you. Right then. Have we got any cool things, James?
Well, I'll start.
Here we go. This is his BBC.
I'll start off with me Atari ST.
Oh. Does it work? Have you plugged it in
lately?
That's
a 1040 STF. Yes, it has. It does. And it's even got MIDI ports. I've got a sampler for it as well.
See the floppy drive there as well, James.
You are, sorry?
The floppy port on the other side. Is that a 3.5-inch floppy drive on the other side?
3.5-inch floppy.
Fantastic stuff. Look at that.
Got any discs for it? No.
Oh yes, I every now and then I'll get it. I'll plug it up, switch it on, and try and complete Whizball and fail. I've still never in 25 years been able to complete Whizball.
That's a long time, dude.
It's a hell of a long time. I think it says more about me than the game, to be honest. Number two is let me just see if I can find the link here. Bottoms. I've got too many tabs open, kids.
God, we're slick. God, we're slick. Oh,
screenshots. By I think the way, it's called screenshot. That's right. It's screenshotsofdespair.tumblr.com. Every now and then I'll see tweeted a really funny Tumblr blog or posterous blog or Twitter blog, as it's going to be, I imagine. And this is screenshotsofdespair.tumblr.com. And basically, people have found stuff which is just too depressing. Like, for example, you cannot be in a relationship with yourself.
Well, is that a sign?
Yeah. Nothing to undo. And just that sort of thing.
Jolly good.
Have a look. And the third thing is, and this one has been a real bugbear of mine, the third cool thing is, and this is one I think everybody should adopt, it's called UTC. Have you heard of UTC?
No.
Yes.
Well, Universal Standard Time.
Time, yeah.
Coordinated universal time. What that means is that if you've got a system which depends on the time being correct and it the clock change is coming up, you have to spend two solid days preparing it and preparing staff so it doesn't break when the clock change happens. If everything runs at UTC, you don't have to worry about it because everything works. And you don't have to worry about Eric not turning up on time because the clock change in America is different from the clock change in the UK. And do you know, there are some places in the world where it's 15 minutes different. And the really? Clock changes can happen at strange times, different days, even all over the world. And UTC just sorts all that out. And the most important thing is it's GMT, basically. Damn it.
Is it free?
So UTC is my pick of the week, and everybody should adopt it. We don't, by next week, well, we're all screwed, I think.
Is there any apps?
I I went on the internet, and there is something called what time is it in my what time is it in UTC? Just type in UTC time now into Google, and you'll find out what time it is in UTC. And I think that the British Tech Network should pioneer that approach.
The anagrams have continued in the chat room. DT says, "Yeah, UTC is an anagram of cut." And Tone in the chat room has said, "Thank goodness, thank goodness then that the UTC isn't UTCN." Very good, thank you. Ian, have you got anything for us, sir?
Yes, I have. I've got a couple of things. Well, just first thing, I want this in the chat room. It's a link to a really nice sign. Before when I was thinking of my cool thing that distracted me on the telly, it was on a Twinings advert. It's called "Lissy, Go Your Own Way." You know the David Mack song? Lovely fancy yes. sound. Can really recommend it. Sounded absolutely lovely. I'm going to have to go and find it and buy an album now.
Ooh,
and the other thing, I've put a link in for that. So if you like folky sounding, it's very similar to the other advert. There's a lady called Charlene Siora, probably mangled her name, that sang one of the Calling songs on the other ad, and that was really nice as well. Again, that was really cool. And on a more sensible techie note, I've been playing around with a thing called Wunderlist.
Right.
Which is a really nice sort of task management type utility, and they've got apps running on just about every platform. Really nice little web one. The one's just turned up for my Windows Phone. You can get them for your iPhone, everything else. It's called Wunderlist, and it seems to work really nicely. It emails you as well if you let it, and it'll send you reminders in your inbox saying you still haven't done that, you know.
But
it's quite a good...
It's a list application.
Yeah, it's another task management application. It's a GTD type thing if you're into that kind of stuff.
Okie doke, well done. Sarah, what have you got for us?
I haven't really got one, but when James was talking earlier on about World Service Move and stuff like that, it made me reminded me of a Twitter feed that I actually really enjoy following, which is the Bush House Mice. Now, James might be aware of this.
Oh, I am. Not.
And I just love some of the tweets that they actually, especially during the move, you know, about various things, and some people have really got into sort of, you know, especially obviously people that work at Bush House and Broadcasting House, into the spirit of it, and it's really good. So I just enjoy that. It's twitter.com/bushhousemice.
Jolly good. That was a pick.
That was my pick. I haven't really got one, so
very good.
When James said, I thought I'd pick that one because I do enjoy reading their tweets.
Talking of not really having one, Eric, have you got a piece of paper for us as your pick of the week?
Well, as you know, I did get an iPad 3 or third generation with the Retina display. And so naturally, my cool thing is the packing material that came with it. Look at these cool things.
They are good.
Rather than styrofoam,
they?
Apple has now finally replaced it with a
cardboard.
Tree-based product, nice and biodegradable, but equally sturdy. So I commend them for that. And that is my cool thing.
The insert, that's good. The inserts in Apple packaging are well worth having.
Yes.
The protective corners. Oh.
Although I have to give Amazon credit. I mean, my Kindle box is across the room, but they've made recycled chic. They've taken the Apple approach to making a beautiful unboxing, but they've done it with primarily what do they call it? Post-consumer content.
Excellent.
At least 35 or 45% of that. So it's brown and it's full of speckles and things. It's your recycled paper look, but at least it's it still gives you the Apple-like experience.
Good. I'm glad we waited for that. Thank you, Eric.
You see, it reminds me, you know, when you buy a kid, you know, when you buy a kid a really expensive gift and all they do is end up playing with the box?
Yeah.
It's Eric.
Eric proving that taking part is what matters.
Here's the Kindle box. You've probably seen this, right? So it comes like this,
yeah.
And they've got the sculpted. I mean, this is right out of Apple's playbook, right? They've taken the sculpted. It fits the cables right in there. No plastic bags. Look at this. It's got a little insert up here, but again, recycled cardboard, and it looks like it looks like something you pulled out of like a paper towel dispenser, and yet it is the getting to know your Kindle.
Exactly.
The
Kindle boxes are great until you want to give them as a present and put some message inside. Because when I got that, I ripped it open thinking I'll get the box out and then I'll wrap it and put a present, you know, put a message inside it. And of course, as soon as I ripped it open, that was it. I'd open my wife's present effectively straight away. And you're like, oh, bugger. So I had to seal it and then put duct tape around it and swear blind and never opened it. My pick is awesome. I got stuck in a traffic jam tonight on the way home, just outside Southampton. And
please don't say it's a bottle.
This saved me. Angry Birds Space.
All right. Oh, no.
It's out today. It's fresh. It's new. It's groovy. And it's bloody addictive. And it's excellent.
Free?
69p, so it's not the end of the world. Okay. You buy it for your phone. But basically what happens is...
It'll be free for Android then.
You throw it. It's like Angry Birds like you did before, but you use a planet. And the planet has gravitational pull on the and the Angry Bird.
So that reminds me of Space Penguin. There used to be a game I used to play called Space Penguin. It was exactly like that. Fantastic. I'll see if it's available for Android.
Yeah, I'm just doing that now, James.
Oh, no, there's another big time sink.
Right, so here you go. Look, you've got a bit of a planety thing going on there. And when you drag and pull your bird back, what happens is the gravitational force of the planet works on them. So if you get it right, you can send the bird into orbit around the planet.
Wouldn't the birds just burn up in the atmosphere?
You're already in the atmosphere there. But eventually what you do is you have to try and figure out how to get the bird to go through a figure of eight on the planets.
It is on Android and it's free.
It's available on Android.
And I'm downloading it now.
Angry
Birds. I know what I'm going to be doing tomorrow.
Space. Well worth
nice
every
work,
penny. Good.
Apparently Missy is obsessed with your haircut.
She's
who?
Upset.
She's obsessed with your haircut. Missy is.
She likes the haircut. She can't focus on anything else right now. Well, I'm glad it does it for you, girl. It's perfect. Don't touch a thing.
Well, unfortunately,
my wife's happy with it. She hated it when it was long, so there you go. She says I look younger now, but she's going to say that to justify that she wanted it shorter, so. There we go.
It's very Sting. That's a bit more worrying, though.
Sting's my hero. Leave him alone. And Sarah's bought... There we go. I've never had anyone buy my picks, so I'm quite flattered now. Thank you. Where can we get a hold of you, Jamie boy? You can get a hold of me at any traffic jam. That's going to be on the limo, isn't it, this week? All this week.
Absolutely. I'll be rubbing my thumb up and down it all the way to work. That doesn't sound right, does it?
It's a sizable download, though, isn't it, James?
It took a while. It does take a while.
Yeah.
James.
You can get me on SYZYGY, Syzygy on Twitter. And if you fancy playing Draw Something, although I think I'm at a disadvantage with my crappy little iPod Touch and my Android phone, because there are people who play Draw Something on an iPad. And that's a proper size canvas to be able to play on. I'm Syzygy_UK because some git took Syzygy.
I have the same problem on my Gmail.
Bad luck. There's some fantastic drawing apps, brushes, and you need to support to at Kercal on Twitter, KERCAL, and he's the iPad artist down at Elmug, and he'll tell you what to buy and where to buy, and he'll tell you the stylus to get and all that kind of stuff. So,
ooh.
Mr. Grant, where are you, sir?
I'm on at TIOABOA, turn it off and back on again, and plus TIOABOA if you want to have a look at my car pics from the Geneva Motor Show.
Do it. Google plus it. Send us a link and we'll tweet it out.
Knock it up.
Sarah, where are you go? Slaving away over a hot computer.
Right now I'm playing Angry Birds Space.
Oh, good to know. You're either typing and making a clickety-clackety in the background or ignoring me entirely. There we go. That's a
live
screen.
I am not ignoring you. You can get hold of me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK.
Excellent. And Eric, you'll be playing with your box because it is a good box.
EricLanigan.com, Twitter.com/EricLanigan, ERIKLANIGAN.
Oh, I've upset him now. We'll be back again.
Wait a minute. You have upset me because I sent you and Kyle a very long email that took me a long time to write that was everything I know about audio technology and asked, what do you guys think of this? Is this true? And if not, could you cover it on your show? And I have not heard one response.
I've never got an email from you about audio technology.
Never got an email. It's like 2-3. I'll send it again. Are you still doing
you
the
do
show?
Realize, Eric, you do realize that Bagel Tech Missy will be reading it on her show as an advice card.
No, we've got the sound show. Kyle had to stop doing shows at the moment because he's coming back on the Mac show tomorrow. So he's got a window that he's done. Because NBA started up again, he does the voiceovers for the NBA. So,
really?
Yeah. So he's basically swamped with that at the moment. But now the NBA, so the NBA starts to wind down a little bit, he'll be because March Madness, he's done all the stuff for March Madness as well. So for NCAA, so that's going to be coming back now, and he's going to get a bit more time and come back on the Mac show and things like that. But he hasn't had time to do the sound show. But we've got a guy called Vance Williams, who we've asked to do it, and Joe's keen to do it, and Christopher, who does the F1 show with us and the Lancet show, he's an audio tech for a studio here in Birmingham, and he's keen to do that as well. So send it in, and I'll pass it on to them, and it might be the trigger that gets the new show up and running again, because that we just haven't done anything with it. We've got about, I would hope that by the end of this year, we've probably got about 12 shows on the network, maybe a few more. But basically, if you've got a show idea, and we really desperately need a gaming show. We haven't got a gaming show. Anyone who knows anything about gaming, if you want a podcast and you want unlimited bandwidth, come here and do it. Anything that you get for advertising, you get to keep for yourself. And as well, if you want a Windows podcast, because we're desperate for a Windows podcast. I'm seeing a group of Windows developers on Tuesday night, and I'll be begging them as well to come and do it with us. We need certain types of podcasts. If you've got an idea for a podcast, write to me, britishtechnews@gmail.com, and we'll talk about getting you on the network. There's tons of bandwidth and there's tons of opportunity, so live out your fantasy on our time. There'll be a bit of quality control, but nothing too severe. We'll be back again tomorrow. We've got the daily show, or the news show in the morning, and then we've got the photo show at 2 and the Mac show at 3:30. If you're listening in the States, then don't forget, we haven't done daylight savings yet. We won't be doing that for another week. We've got next weekend that we're doing, so we'll be back in line in a week's time. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.